Hello, I'm Terry David Mulligan, and this is Tasting Room Radio, Year 12. We began our life in a studio in a barn on the Naramata Bench. We've done the show also from the foot of Lonsdale in North Vancouver, and now Nanoose Bay, Vancouver Island. And I don't think we're done yet. Moving, that is. It's an interesting show we have for you. These are four interviews that I've been holding on to because we had to get through all of the festivals and the releases of wines that were coming out. But these are stories I wanted to tell you. You'll know about the first guy. His name is Jason Priestley. He and I co-hosted and co-produced a show along with Chad Oakes, our partner, called Hollywood and Vines. And we got 3 years shot over a course of 7 years around the world. He is a working actor and a director now. And here's what happened. Willie Mitchell and Brendan Morrison had organized the 10th annual Saltwater Classic in Tofino, a fishing derby that raises funds, some $500,000 currently. And it's a catch and release program. If you catch and keep your salmon, you can't enter the contest, even though you've paid your fee. But if you catch it, measure it, figure out what the weight is, and then release that fish, you can be up for big-time prizes. So first things first, we're going to talk to Jason Priestley on board Willie Mitchell's boat, king size. He had just literally flown in to Tofino that day. He got 1 hour sleep after shooting and directing an episode of Beverly Hills 90210, the new one. He brought along his son, his daughter, and his beloved Nadog, who seriously loves to fish. And we only had a couple of hours there. So I wanted to talk to Jason about 90210, the loss of his friend Luke Perry. And then it was important that we moved on to just talking about normal things. Just be normal about it. What he's currently collecting and drinking. Some of the wines that he has released over the last couple of years with his friend Chad Oakes. And just generally what he's up to. He's shooting Private Eyes as well. He's got a very successful show based in Toronto called Private Eyes. So that's the first segment, Jason Priestley. The second one is the conversation that I had after we got off the boat and on the docks with Brendan Morrison, the organizer of the Saltwater Classic, and his buddy and our friend, Willie Mitchell. And we were talking about the fishery, how we're handling the fishery on the West Coast. Is it political? Is it in reality? What is it based on? How are we making those judgments? Now, one thing about that interview, at the same time that we started to talk out on the deck, the announcer on the day was letting people know that there was 10 minutes left and 5 minutes left for the silent auction, which is the big fundraiser part. And you had to let him do what he was going to do. So we just kind of talked over it. My apologies for two voices coming at you at the same time, but that's the best we could do. And then the last two segments of the show are with Andrea Sartori, who is the great-grandson of Pietro Sartori, who founded the Sartori di Verona Winery in 1898. Today, it is one of Veneto's big five wine producers, big time. And he has come back to Canada to remind all of us of the wines that they are producing and releasing. They are celebrating their 120th anniversary and limited releases of their Pinot Grigio 2017, the Veronese Marani Bianco from 2016, the 2015 La Passione, the 2016 Valpolicella Superior, the 2015 Valpolicella Ripasso Superior, and the Amarone della Valpolicella 2012. We're going to taste and talk about all of those. We're going to talk about the Italian wine industry and about 120 years making wines. By the way, for five of those years, they couldn't make wines because they were in the hands of the German army during World War II. And so we welcome to Tasting Room Radio, the last two segments of the show, Andrea Sartori. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by The Hatch. And congratulations to all those hobos at The Hatch. Their blend of Malbec, Syrah, and Merlot called the Dynasty Red has just won the highest honor, a Platinum Award at the Wine Align National Wine Awards 2019. There's not a lot of it there. Get your hands on it. TheHatchWines.com.
You're listening to Tasting Room Radio with your host, Terry David Mulligan.
Here's my thinking on talking with Jason for a second, because we haven't had any bite on. I figure if I, Willie turns the, the dance music down, that we can maybe entice a fish to bite. So if anything happens, if there's yelling, you'll know what happened. All right.
Jay.
Hi, Terry.
Hey, bud. You
came flying in here the morning that we went fishing, Saturday, directly from a set.
Pretty much directly from set. Yeah, we are shooting the Beverly Hills 90210 reunion show, BH90210, in Vancouver, of all places.
Of all places.
I was on set, actually, not only acting but directing until 8 a.m. Before I came to visit you here in beautiful Tofino, British Columbia.
Well, how much sleep did you get?
About an hour.
What do you remember about the last 2 hours of the shoot?
Not much. No, I remember. I was good while I was at work, because you have to remain focused while you're at work. And, but then it gets difficult later.
And of course, at the same time, you're on camera.
Exactly.
Oh, okay.
It's hard. Well, you remember when you used to work as an actor? Sometimes you just have to stay up all night.
That's right. Friday nights.
That's right.
Friday night.
Every Friday.
Yeah, man.
Right. They call them Fratterday.
Until the light came up on Saturday morning, you
That's
were okay.
Right. That's yeah. right.
Cold. What were your expectations? I mean, how'd the shoot go? There was so many things going on, so many stories there.
The shoot has been, we're working on episode 4 of our 6 episodes this season right now. I unfortunately have to leave now to go and start production on season 4 of Private Eyes in Toronto.
Of course you do.
So I'll be sort of like bouncing back and forth between the two film sets for the next 4 or 5 weeks until 90210 is complete, until their production schedule is complete, and then I'll just go full time to Private Eyes. But the next 4 or 5 weeks are going to be pretty challenging for
different
me.
Different sets too.
Very different sets. Very, very different sets, and a long way apart, and 3 time zones apart. So yeah. It's going to be a challenge for me.
What were the things that you talked about when you finally got together and you had a chance to talk about all of the years from when you were initially on? I think we just lost a member.
I think I think Naomi thought you had a fish for a second.
Ran into it. Sorry.
That was super.
You notice
that was super exciting.
We did
for
not
a second.
Place ourselves between her rod and.
No, never get in between her
never,
and a rod,
never.
Ever, because you'll end up in the water. She will push you overboard to get to a fish.
She will be legal help.
Not that my wife's competitive, but anyway. No, not at all. What were the things that we talked about?
Well, you could see what the press was doing. I was kind of wondering what you guys were.
Yeah, no, we... have remained in
stayed
touch,
in touch
and,
yeah.
and stay in touch with each other. So we didn't have to play catch up with each other. But even those of us who aren't as close as we once were, we didn't waste a lot of time rehashing the last 25 years. I think that we all
it had been hashed.
Yeah, it's we all share a bond, and we all have a friendship that supersedes all of that other stuff. Once we all got together, we all just started talking about what we were doing, why we were there, what we were looking forward to, and how we were gonna get it done. And I think that's. That's a testament to all of those individuals and how they approach the work that we do together.
It's impossible to ask this question about the loss of Luke and what effect it had on the on the cast and the
yeah.
crew, and then the storyline itself. How'd you deal with it?
Well, it was Luke was obviously a very big part of our 90210 family and personally a very good friend of mine, and a guy who was a very close friend of mine, and a guy who I worked with for years, not only on that show but on several other projects in the intervening years. Luke's passing this year was very difficult for me, for Naomi, for our family, for all of us, yep. collectively. As for the show and what it meant for the show, I mean, it was difficult. It was difficult to know how to address it,
yeah,
and have it be tasteful and respectful and not feel exploitative. And so those were waters that were tricky for us to navigate. But I think we did a pretty good job. We did our own tribute to him, you know, and dedicated the season to him. And I think that's going to be good for all of us.
Okay. So Private Eye.
Yeah. Year four.
Four.
Yeah.
How fast was that?
It was pretty fast, but our hiatus between finishing season three and starting season four has almost been 12 months. So it's been a long time. And not normal, as you well know, for a television show to have that kind of lengthy hiatus in between seasons.
And not normal, but it's getting more and more normal that a Canadian production finds itself in the States.
Yes, the show is on ION in America. It's the number three show on that network, consistently from week to week. We're also, you know, the show has been sold in 125 countries around the world now, and performs very well. The show's been very successful, and we're all very excited by the success of the show.
So really, the only show it can't beat out in some of those other markets around the world is Hollywood and Vines, which of course is the number one,
and yes, and continues to be
over and over again. Okay, so let's talk wine for just a second, so
yeah,
we can qualify for Tasting Room Radio. What are you currently drinking?
What am I currently drinking?
Well, what's caught your? What are you collecting? Let's put it that way.
What am I collecting these days? The 2015 and 16. First growth and second growth Bordeaux, because those vintages are going to be the vintages of the century.
We know this for a fact.
Yeah. Yes, we do. We know this for a fact. I also just picked up a bunch of 2009 first growth Bordeaux because my son was born in 2009. I'm going to give it to him when he's of age. And hopefully he'll be kind enough to share it with his old man.
Okay.
And that's kind of what I've been focused on these days.
Okay.
And it's seeing as it's summertime, rosé. So a lot of rosé. We discovered something in Paris earlier this year, a rosé called Saint Marguerite, which is delicious, which we love very much.
And can we get it in here?
I don't. It's a pretty small production rosé, from Provence. But it's definitely worth trying to find it if you can.
Was it salmon colored? Translucent?
Translucent salmon colored, yes. as you know, that's right off the top of the list. As you know, is our want at our household.
Listen, but in that time that you're spending in Toronto and Vancouver, yeah, have you tasted any Canadian wines that got your attention?
Have I had anything Canadian that's caught my attention these days? Well, you and I shared a couple of bottles of 2014 Foxtrot Pinot Noir last night that I thought was lovely.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was nice. Really nice. I mean, I've had Foxtrot before, but I think I do enjoy the Foxtrot Pinots.
Tell me about, I have a bottle, Chad Oakes, our good friend, gave me a bottle of Mulligan by Behrens and Hiscock.
Yes.
What the hell is that? Who's the kid on the cover, the drawing?
I don't know, but it's an incredible likeness of you, don't you
think? The kid is all ears.
He looks like if you and Alfred E. Newman had a kid, it would look like the drawing on the label.
And what do we know about, why'd they call it Mulligan?
That I'm not sure. You'd have to ask Les.
Is it like a dog?
You'd have to ask Les Behrens about that.
Okay.
I think it's something about taking a mulligan.
Okay.
But you know, that wine, the Mulligan, is just another concoction from the genius mind of Les Behrens, the master blender from the top of Howell Mountain.
Okay, and here's the reason why I started this entire interview. I want to ask you about the wine that you and Chad Oakes
yep.
got made by
Les Behrens. Yeah.
Les Behrens. And where did it show up? Who's got their hands? It's all gone now, right?
Yes. Well, we did. We made two vintages of it. One we called the first one in 2013. We called the Director.
Yeah.
Which Francis Ford Coppola sent us both a letter saying, "Guys, you got to change that name because I already have a wine called Director's Cut, and it's going to confuse the marketplace."
Oh, of course.
Yeah. I was just excited to get a letter from Francis Ford Coppola. I didn't care what it said. So the second vintage of it we called That's Entertainment. The first vintage, 125 cases, entirely sold out to private collectors, friends of ours, people like you, Terry, the gatekeepers of the wine industry.
The trendsetters.
Exactly, yes. What do they call them on the Instagram?
Influencers.
Influencers, right. Yes, like you. Yes.
Exactly.
Influencers who have podcasts at all. So and then the second vintage we called That's Entertainment. We only had 100 cases this year, and it's pretty much all spoken for now and being shipped to our friends and family and influencers like yourself.
Thank you. Did you bring me any?
No. I don't have any with me right now. I'm sorry.
Next time at the Priestley Suite at Oaks Place,
yeah,
I could get down there and try some.
Oh, I know you can. Chad's got multiple cases of it in his cellar.
Are you going to do more?
We're not going to do a 2015 vintage because the 2015, it's 100% Petit Sirah, this wine that we did with Les. And he didn't have enough, he didn't get the right Petit Sirah to make it for us in 2015. But I think start moving forward, we're going to do a different wine with Les, but we'll have news about that when it's time to share it.
Here's what really just ticks me off that I didn't get my game together. In the car,
yeah,
waiting to be opened, is a 2000 Petit Sirah.
Oh, really?
From Napa.
Wow.
Sonoma.
What about that bottle of Eller's Merlot that you brought?
Yes!
How do you leave all this stuff in your car?
How can we bring it?
What is wrong with you? Oh, my God.
Because we weren't in the car. We were in a boat. We were in Willie's boat.
Ah, Terry. You gotta start to prioritize.
You gotta get it
together. Is it just because you're getting old?
Yeah.
Are you starting to get soft?
Exactly that. A little soft. Soft in the head. Thank you very much for this.
You're welcome, buddy.
Have a good run.
And, buddy, I'm just excited to get to see you and spend the day with you. It's been way too long.
Jason Priestley. On Willie Mitchell's King Size from Tofino Resort and Marina. Strangely enough, in Tofino.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by The Hatch. At the prestigious 2019 Wine Line Awards, the Hatch Wines won a coveted Platinum Award for their Dynasty Red 2016. Also 5 silver and 1 bronze, and claimed the number 18 spot of the top 25 wineries in Canada. All the details at thehatchwines.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth Vineyards in the Cowichan Valley. Just a reminder that the Cowichan Valley Festival runs August 23rd through 25th. And kicks off with a party at the pavilion at Shawnigan Lake. There'll be live music all weekend at Unsworth Vineyards and a long table winemaker's dinner in the winery August 25th. A 5-course menu paired with specially selected wines. Your host for the evening is winemaker Dan Wright. All the details at unsworthvineyards.com. And welcome back to Tasting Room Radio. I'm Terry David Mulligan. Still to come, our 2-segment conversation with the 5th generation of his family making wine in Verona. We welcome Andrea Sartori. Let's head back to Tofino and the tail end of the Saltwater Classic as organized by Brendan Morrison and his great team. They've raised a lot of dough, he will explain. The other voice you'll hear is Willie Mitchell, who is a partner in the Tofino Resort and Marina where all of this took place. And he was kind enough to take myself and Jason and his family out fishing for a couple of hours and just getting away on the water. So here we go. This is a free-for-all. Brendan Morrison and Willie Mitchell on the deck. And by the way, that other voice you'll hear is the PA announcer. We couldn't do anything about it because it was all-encompassing and they were raising funds. So bear with us.
You're not doing whatever. Like, okay. All day on my boat.
Did you check your bait?
Okay. You're not going fast enough. You're going too slow.
Brendan Morrison, Willie Mitchell at the table. I've been carrying on this dialogue with chefs that you know. We all know And I was asking the question of those chefs, what we have, we have issues with the fishery. We have a fishery that's got some serious problems. What can you do in this kitchen? What can you do as a chef? What can you tell your clientele that would help this fishery in the province of British Columbia? It's a big deal. What could they do from the kitchen? I'm going to ask you the same question about what you can do from where you are. Just give me your sense of the state of the fishery in BC currently, Willie.
Well, Mo, you went to culinary school, right? You can talk about this one. I don't know. I certainly think, and obviously on property here, we have two restaurants, you know, 1909 and the pub. We just try and make sustainable choices and for the betterment of the province of British Columbia and the marine environment. And that for us is, obviously, we have some very good technical chefs and they can work with any product. So it's easy to make Chinook salmon taste great, has a lot of fat, right? Well, do that with coho, do that with other species that are more abundant on our coast, or find solutions on land. And there is solutions on land. There's Atlantic salmon done on land on parts of the world, and we'll use that. So,
and I was talking to Chef Paul,
yeah.
And he was saying, well, I mean, we're harvesting everywhere. It's not just springs and coho. You know, you guys are under the water.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, we're trying to change the game on that. Is that certainly Chinook and salmon in general is, you know, lifeblood of our coast, okay, and certainly stuff we eat a lot. But also, you know, there's a lot of other things in our water. You know, acorn barnacles, gooseneck barnacles. It could go on and on and on as far as what we can harvest and eat. And when you have quality people in behind it who have the technical expertise, it tastes delicious. So we're really excited about that part of the planet and then that kind of thin blue line and getting underneath of it. And so those are some of the options we do to help minimize our impact.
Willie Mitchell at the table. Brendan Morrison.
Yeah, you know, a lot with what Willie said there is making right choices when you're harvesting fish. And, you know, be respectful of your catch and you know, make sure you're consuming what you keep. You know, a lot of times I think, you know, I'm not saying this is a problem in the restaurant industry, but sometimes you have, you know, certain guys that are on the water and they get a little excited if they're having a good day. And you know, you might keep more fish than you actually eat over the course of a year. So I think that can be something that's curbed a bit at times. You just take what you need. I mean, we're very fortunate here in BC to be blessed with the opportunity to go out and harvest catch, harvest fish that you catch and you can bring it home to your table. And there's not too many places in the world that have that opportunity. So be respectful. I mean, we want this fishery to be around long after we're gone. We want our children, our grandchildren to be able to experience what we're experiencing. So, you know, there's a lot of moving pieces to the fishery right now. You know, obviously there's issues with the southern resident killer whales and the low return of the early run Fraser River Chinook right now. So just, you know, we're trying to work through that process. And obviously we want to do our part as sports fishermen to try and help whatever issues are being had right now.
This is your 10th year doing this derby here in Tofino. Tell people about how you enter. No, not so much how you enter, how you can win this, how you can actually fish and win a derby.
Well, you know, we've done it for 10 years, and the first 9 years we've raised over $500,000. But I think, you know, we have an online presence, or TofinoSaltwaterClassic.com. But, you know, just coming to this derby, you are what enables this derby to happen. I mean, all this money stays local, goes back into primarily youth initiatives, the main one being the Wickenness Community School Healthy Lunch Program. We provide fruits and vegetables, and there's been a direct correlation between students eating healthy and the overall academics of the school increasing, which is phenomenal.
How much money have you raised over the 10 years?
Well, this is our 10th. In the first 9 years, we've raised just over $500,000.
Well done.
Wow, we appreciate it. Thank you. And it doesn't happen from one or two people. It's a community as a whole.
Brendan Morrison, Willie Mitchell at the table. Tell people about the weigh-in.
The weigh-in, well, it's an interesting process. Well, this year we transitioned to a catch and release derby for Chinook salmon. So we're measuring fish on the water. We have weigh boats stationed strategically. And when you get a fish on, you call in your location, and weigh boat will come over, take the fish while it's in the water, still in the net. They'll tape it, measure it, revive it, release it, away it goes. And we still are retaining halibut and coho this year, so there is a weigh station up here on the dock where you can bring your fish up the dock and people get to see what you harvested.
How's the sports fishing community handling this this new fishery?
Well, you know, I think initially the sports fishermen were caught off guard, you know, not to get too deep into it, but a lot of people with science behind it felt it was more of a political-based decision than a science-based decision. But, I mean, we could probably debate that for a long time. But, you know, as sports fishermen, I know Willie's extremely passionate. I'm extremely passionate about being on the water. You know, with the regs that were put in place, we're not going to let that curtail or curb our enthusiasm for what we love to do. And all these anglers as well. I mean, yes, we love to catch fish, but, you know, we love everything that goes into it. Just being on the water, the camaraderie with your friends, you know, whether it's your family or buddies. Sometimes it's fishing by yourself. Like for me, there's a few things with fishing. It's an escape. I kind of call it my meditation. And you kind of just recharge.
It's funny because people say, well,
two minutes left on the sound off. What'd you catch out there?
I said nothing. Well, why'd you go out? You have to come with me to understand that. Willie, what's the community talking about? How is this going down in terms of the fishery? Can we change this, do you think?
Well, I think, Terry, it's in a place where it's evolving. I think it would be the word to describe it is that, you know, there's some people who have really took action upon themselves to do the right thing for the betterment of wild salmon in British Columbia. And then there's a body that's kind of been forced to take some action because of, obviously, the powers that be. And then there's some people who just used to harvest out of the ocean, to be honest with you, and just harvest and give away wild salmon and kind of undermine the whole economics of it. And so I think it's all changing right now. And so when, you know, stuff changes, there's certainly some uncertainty. And I think, you know, realistically, I think there's more awareness and more awareness at the end of the day for you know, a fish protein that feeds the masses, was certainly important to British Columbians and the culture of British Columbians in general. I think that's a win. And, you know, with that, there's some pain. But I think in the long term, I think it's going to be the betterment for what everyone wants. And that's a healthy marine ecosystem.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with Willie's statement there. Evolving would be the right term, I think. You know, I think for a lot of years, you know, with fishing, especially, and retention, you know, it's almost an ego thing, a pride thing.
Seven,
you want to be the guy, or
six,
the mentality is you wanted to be
five,
the guy to walk up the dock with
four,
the big fish and show everybody,
three,
hey, look what I caught. Well,
two,
you know, you can catch that
one,
fish,
silent auction,
get a picture
closed,
with that
folks,
fish,
thank you very
releasing
much,
that fish, watch that thing swim away to go do its thing. I mean, that's huge brood stock, and I mean, you have the proof in your own mind, and if people want to see pictures, you can still get a picture with that fish. But let those big fish go, and, you know, I'm still for retaining fish. I love to eat fish, and I do that personally. I'm not being hypocritical when I'm saying, you know, release and keep, but my mindset now is with the evolution and where we're going is if you have the opportunity to release the fish the proper way and it's healthy and you can swim away, then I think it's the right thing to do.
I use the terminology just to piggyback Mo. It's right, you know, we fish for sustenance, right, not to feed the ego. And I think if you're in a place of feeding the ego, then we're over harvesting the ocean.
Yeah, well done. Thank you, boys.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Terry.
Thank you.
Thanks, Terry.
Slow.
Brendan Morrison, Willie Mitchell at the table.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth Vineyards in the Cowichan Valley. Just a reminder that the Cowichan Valley Festival runs August 23rd through 25 and kicks off with a party at the pavilion at Shawnigan Lake. There'll be live music all weekend at Unsworth Vineyards and a long table winemaker's dinner in the winery August 25th. A 5-course menu paired with specially selected wines. Your host for the evening is winemaker Dan Wright. All the details at unsworthvineyards.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Road 13. It's time to book your dinner with Backyard Farms on Road 13. Amazing artisan wines with 4-course meals prepared by Chef Chris Van Hooydonk of Backyard Farms. August 17, September 28, and October the 5th. All the details at road13vineyards.com. Welcome back. I'm Terry David Mulligan. This is Tasting Room Radio. You can find the details for this show at mulliganstew.ca, and contained therein is Tasting Room Radio. I believe next week we're going to be speaking with the best small winery in Canada, Moon Cursor. Congratulations. We're going to be doing an interview with the top winery in Canada, Mission Hill. And I believe on the September long weekend, we'll finally do our field blend special. I've been asking the question about field blends to winemakers and owners for about 2 months now. Remarkable, the information I'm getting back about field blends and how BC plays into that. We'll tell you more as we get closer. Thank you. Let's honor and salute the Sartori de Verona Winery, family owned since 1898. We're going to meet the fifth generation of the Sartori family, Andrea, at Hawksworth Restaurant in downtown Vancouver. He was pouring the limited releases celebrating the 120th anniversary of the winery. All of them approachable and yummy as hell. Let's celebrate those 120 years.
To be precise, is 121 because we turned 120 last year. But yes, we are. I'm the fourth generation of the family, and the founder of the company was my great grandfather Pietro.
Was he the grumpy one?
He was very grumpy. ironically, I met him because he died over 90 in 1961. Actually, sorry, I take it back, in 1964, and I'm born in 1959. The persons I couldn't meet was my grandfather Regolo, who died very young in 1952, and he was only 54 of age. But Regolo was the one that had the visions that the wine business would be the future of the family.
And 121 years ago, it was a practical thing that they were doing. They had a bistro, they had a restaurant, and they needed wine on the table, fresh wine.
Absolutely. Great-grandfather Pietro was the owner of Hotel and Restaurant San Pietro, which is in the south part of town. And he built a Villa Maria, which is a 1700th century Venetian villa surrounded by vineyards. When he built the estate, he found a very small cellar that was normally used by the family, by the previous family that owned the estate, just for home consumption. So he had the brilliant idea to use that winery and the wine produced there to have a consistent supply of great quality wines for the restaurants.
And please, if you would, Andre, paint a picture for the audience. What's happened in those 121 years? No, today, just today, your place in the world of wine.
Well, a lot of things changed. Obviously, when great-grandfather and grandfather were doing business, there was not... The DOC appellations were not mapped out. Of course, Valpolicella was always been there. But we have traced that the consortio, the first year that the consortio was formed was 1923. And officially, Valpolicella became a DOC appellation only in 1968. So since then, you know, everything has been regulated. We have been through Second World War, which was a major fact for our family. In fact, the estate was confiscated by German troops for 5 years, so we couldn't do a lot. And the company started back in the early 50s. When grandfather passed away, my dad was only 22 of age and my uncle 19. So I think we have been lucky because those two young fellas, not only they could survive the company, but they brought Sartori to the next level.
I'm Terry David Mulligan. We're at Hawksworth, and we're having a wonderful conversation with Andre Sartori, the fourth generation brothers of the Sartori family, now running Sartori de Verona. And we're having a tasting at Hawksworth Restaurant. How did the winery and the staff and the family survive those war years?
That was hard. In fact, grandfather sent all the family up in the mountains because the winery is only 2 kilometers from the train line going up to the Brenner Pass. So they were bombing every other night. In fact, he built also a bomb shelter down in the cellar. And that's where we found the only vintage, the only wines that survived the Germans. They survived, stole everything. So I don't have any pre-war vintages in my library, except 100 bottles that grandfather was hiding in the bomb shelter.
What did he hide?
Well, I know you're not going to believe this, but it's a white Recioto. It's a dessert wine. I was also hoping that would be an Amarone, but unfortunately, or fortunately, because the wine is still good, we open up a bottle occasionally. It's a white Recioto, probably made with Garganega.
I asked Marchese Antonori
what was his first memory of the fact that he was growing up in a winery, a vineyard? He said, my father came running to me, said, I want you to see this, smell this, see that, and there was wine was running through the cellars and out into the fields. The Germans had shot up the tanks. And he said, that's when it became apparent to me that this was a very special place. I never forgot that smell. What was the first memory you had?
My first memory was actually the wine people more than the products, because in those times when I was like a teenager, my family was used to entertain home, our guests and our customers. And I remember these wonderful wine people coming from all over the world, visiting the winery and tasting the wines. And I got really fascinated by people first and eventually by the products.
Now, the reason why I ask you about your family is because this is a very personal statement and a very personal journey that your family is on, all four generations. Your name is on the bottle. You have set a very high standard for your wines, and you and your brothers are responsible for that label, that standard.
Well, it's a big pressure on us because we have basically three generations looking at us, and now we have also the fifth generation looking at us. I have a 26 years old son, my brother has a 24, and my cousin has a 10 years old son. So we all looking to make the winery to leave the winery in the best possible position for those kids.
I'm Terry David Mulligan. We're at Hawksworth, and we're having a wonderful conversation with Andre Sartori, the fourth generation brothers of the Sartori family, now running Sartori de Verona.
Something happened with that fourth generation, you, your group. All of a sudden, you became a world wine, not just Italy and not just Europe, but all over the world, including Canada. What changes did you make? Was that your vision to expand the brand?
Yes, I wanted the winery to become global because we had to open our company to the global markets. And we ended up now exporting roughly 80% of our productions in more than 17 countries. I think is a paramount for us to be able to have distribution in all those markets. This helps us in having recognitions of the brand for the world travelers.
We're going to be tasting, you're going to be pouring, and you have brought with you limited releases for the 120th anniversary. But those first three on the tasting mat, there's a Pinot Grigio on the left?
Yeah, we also brought a Pinot Grigio and another white wine, which means a lot to me, Marani. Pinot Grigio is also, I would say, an international traveler. Yeah. There is not many other Italian wines that are so widely distributed in the world wine markets, and he's definitely one of the big ambassadors of the Italian productions worldwide. So, and we produce a lot of Pinot Grigio, so we are very.
What's
proud.
A lot?
A lot is roughly 8 million bottles a year.
That's fantastic. Pinot Grigio, 2017. There's some for us, just under $20. Now, tell me about the Marani.
Oh, Marani is my appreciation to grandmother. In fact, it takes the name from Fernanda Marani, which is my grandmother. Grandmother was my absolute queen. She was my hero. She was the person, I would say, I liked the most in the family. She was a great woman. She never remarried after she became a widow very young. She was never really active into the company, but she was the one that kept all the family together. She had a great personality. She was a sweet woman, a smooth woman, but she was also, she had a lot of character. She was not intimidated by anything or by any means, and she was elegant. She was flawless. She was into gardening, she liked arts, she was my hero. When I was doing this project, I had all of this in mind, and I had a lot of questions to myself and to our team of winemakers. How are we going to make a wine to match this person?
I like the descriptor of her wines. Was she a good taster?
She was a good taster. Like I said, she was not active in the company, but she never missed a glass of wine on the table when she was having her meals.
Did she see this in her lifetime? Did she see her name on the label?
Unfortunately not. Fernanda died short of 90 around 15 years ago. And the first release of this wine was 2003, actually.
Tell us about that varietal.
Marani is made with Garganega, which is the main grapes we use also for another very known wine called Soave, which is a blend. Instead, Marani is 100% Garganega. And we had a crazy idea, because I didn't tell you, but in the Sartori family, there is a hint of madness. So to match a grandmother personality, I was thinking to make a white Amarone. So what we did was to dry a portions of Garganega that we use for this blend, and we dried between 30 and 40% of the blend. We don't do the full swing like Amarone, which is going to be end of January, but for Marani, we dry the grapes to the end of November.
How does the madness show itself?
Well, if you mention around that you want to produce a white Amarone, I think you'll be arrested.
I'm Terry David Mulligan, and he is Andre Sartori. He is one of the brothers running the 121-year-old winery called Sartori di Verona.
La Passione.
La Passione, it's what I call a local wine, so it's a global profile. If I would profile the consumers today in most of the markets, not just the North American or the Europeans, but I'm including the Asian too, I think I will profile this wine too. This wine is, most of the blend comes from the local varietals, Corvina and Corvinone, but we also put a percentage of Merlot and Cab Sauvignon.
Did my nose pick up some spice?
Yes, you have some spice because you have also a very small percentage here of appassimento, very small, that brings out the spiciness of the Corvina and the Corvinone. So you won't find just the cherry finish that is typical of the Corvina grapes, but you will find also some of the spices that comes from the other varietals.
Describe the blend.
In terms of style, it's red fruit forward. It's 13.5% alcohol, so there's some structures. And the color that comes from the also the appassimento, but the cherry and the red fruit is there. It's up on your nose, and this is actually makes it a very modern wine.
There's 20% Merlot in there too.
Yeah, I define this a modern wine. I think is the best way to describe it.
There's some texture as well.
You find some texture, and that comes from the small percentage of appassimento we do that gives to the wine that boldness and structure.
And affordable.
And it's very affordable. We want to meet really the mainstream consumer with this wine.
This is going to be a two-part interview. You ready?
Yep.
Because when we come back, we'll talk about the 120th anniversary limited releases from Valpolicella and the Amarone, and we'll be right back. We're talking Sartori di Verona, family-owned since 1898 with Andrea Sartori.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Road 13. It's time to book your dinner with Backyard Farms on Road 13. Amazing artisan wines with four-course meals prepared by Chef Chris Van Hooydonk of Backyard Farms, August 17, September 28, and October the 5th. All the details at road13vineyards.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Bench 1775. Friday, August the 30th. Check out Bench 1775 for their country-themed silent disco with DJ Shakes, who will spin tunes to the wireless headphones that you have on your head. Tickets are $25 and include complimentary shuttle service. Friday, August the 30th, 7 to 10 p.m. at Bench 1775. I'm Terry David Mulligan, Tasting Room Radio. Andrea Sartori is with me at Hawksworth Restaurant. They're about to open the doors, and then all the tasters will come in. You're going to be doing a class of sorts?
I'm going to talk about my family, and I'm going to show a few pictures of the winery and do like a virtual tour of where we are. I will explain the district, you know, the wine country out there, and then we're going to taste all the wines we have brought today, especially the 120th anniversary wines.
This is your life.
It is my life. I started very young in the company, and I love it every minute since. And I don't want to retire.
Tell us about Canada and Italian wines, and your wines specifically.
Italian wines on the Canadian's market are obviously stronger on the East Coast. Yeah. Unfortunately, we still have a lot of room for growth in the West Coast. Our percentage in the main market on the West Coast are still very small, but we have hopes. We think the style of the wines is here, is there for the Canadian consumer. So it's just a matter of time. We just need to do a better job.
We are tasting and talking about the history of Sartori di Verona at Hawksworth in Vancouver. I'm Terry David Mulligan, Tasting Room Radio. Let's step back for a second, Andrea, and talk about Italian wines in general around the world. Are you concerned about your place in it, that you're not holding your standards, that there's a glut of perhaps okay Italian wine, but not great, because you want to make great wine these days?
There are still pockets of what we call entry-level table wines produced in the country, but I must say that especially in the last 20 years, I've seen a great and enormous accelerations of quality towards the old country. We all remember the wines produced in the south part of Italy, like Sicily and Puglia. Yeah. The back in the days, they were really table wines, or little more or little less than table wines. And today's days, you can find great wines practically across the country. Even the central part of Italy has improved a lot. We all remember the Montepulciano d'Abruzzo back in the days. And if we taste Montepulciano now, it's a terrific wine. And I think it has grown enormously through all the country. And the market shows that, because in many markets, the Italian share, it's grown enormously in the last 20, 25 years. In fact, Italy, by volume, not by value, but by volume, is the biggest country as export worldwide.
I am having the time of my life talking to Andrea Sartori from Sartori di Verona, a tasting at Hawksworth in Vancouver. Have you had to change the way you approach North America, for example, the way you sell?
Yes, I think we did. Especially in the last 10, 15 years, we have changed the style of our wines to meet the profile of the American consumers. However, saying that specific style, it's now working practically in every other market, including the Asian market.
What's the style?
The style is to have wines which has more structures than we were doing back in the 80s or 90s, to have more red fruit forward, and trying to use sweeter tannic, not harsh tannic. And that's what the consumer is looking for, round, smooth, velvety.
Something that's not going to be laid down for a number of years?
I think what is changing, and I'm glad it's changing, because our company never followed the trend, is to use less barrels, less wine fermented in barrels. We don't want that heavy wood flavor into our wines. We don't think it's elegant, but I think the consumer is going that way.
You're using concrete.
We use concrete, stainless steel, and barrels, but we don't ferment any wine in barrels because we don't want that specific aggressions of the style.
We haven't used the word organic, but I know that you have organic vineyards that you purchased and that you had on your own. However, somebody explained to me a long time ago that Italian farmers, the farming community, by their very nature, are growing organically. They just don't call it organic. Is that true?
Yeah, it's true, and I think most of the farmers that joined us when we bought a company which is specific into organic wine productions, they were growing grapes organically, not because of a commercial reason, but because they really believed in that. Fortunately, in most of Italy, the weather is good enough to allow us to do a lot of organic wines without any effort, and especially down south is basically naturally organic.
Abruzzo,
Sicily, Puglia, they're naturally organic. You don't need really to do a lot.
The Sartori family have been making wines in Verona for some 121 years, and in order to celebrate that, Andrea Sartori is traveling across the country and is in Vancouver, and he has brought with him the 120th anniversary Valpolicella Superior DOC 2016, a blend of four Italian grapes. The 120th anniversary Valpolicella Ripasso Superior DOC 2015 with four varietals in it, and the 120th anniversary Amarone della Valpolicella Classico DOCG 2012.
with five different varietals in the blend. All right, let's talk about your three wines that I came to taste and fondle, if you would. The Valpolicella Superior DOC 2016.
Yes, we did these three wines to practically celebrate the 120th anniversary. These three wines are going to be one-shot deal productions, very limited. It's 24,000 bottles of Amarone and 30,000 bottles each of Ripasso and Superiore.
It's not a lot.
It's not a lot, in fact. We are not showing this to everybody because it's limited. The one behind the projects, we also have Franco Bernabei with us. Franco is one of the superstar winemakers. He's a consultant winemaker that has been working with us for at least 15 years, but he has done a lot of good things here in this particular project.
Let's talk about the blend.
The blend of those three wines are quite traditional, except that on a Ripasso, we added a 5% of Croatina, and on the Amarone, we added also a 5% of Croatina and a 5% of Oselita. Those two varietals are part of 10-15 varietals that were indigenous of the area, but they were abandoned by the farmers in the years because they were less productive and more difficult to maintain. And we're trying to bring back some of those.
What's the Italian word for yummy?
Yummy?
It's yummy.
Yeah.
It's very approachable.
They are, because that is the style of the Valpolicella wines. Even if you are drinking, you're tasting a particular aged Amarone with a particular impressive structures, they're still very approachable because of this, the characteristic of Corvina and Corvinone, which naturally gives to the wine that red fruit forward and that cherry finish. If you taste wines from Verona and you don't find that cherry finish, something is wrong.
So it's $28.99, thereabouts, if you can get your hands on it. I am having the time of my life talking to Andrea Sartori from Sartori di Verona, a tasting at Hawksworth in Vancouver. Now we come to the Valpolicella Ripasso Superior, DOC 2015. And I saw a quote from you that I can't wait to say. It was a quote that you were talking about, you're not a big fan of Ripasso, that it's like using a used tea bag.
Yeah, for many
years. Love that.
Yeah, for many years I was convinced of that, and because I was lobbying also to convince people that you can have a great Valpolicella without having to go through the Ripasso system, and I think all our efforts should have been that way, but I was wrong, because a Ripasso, it's actually helped us enormously to be on international scenes, and Ripasso is today's day is the most successful wine in the area.
How successful?
It's 2-1. So every two bottles sold of Ripasso, we sell one bottle of Valpolicella.
Keep your eyes out for this Valpolicella Ripasso Superior DOC 2015. It's $34.99. And we finally come to the Amarone 2012.
Yes, 2012, it's also a great year, but going back a little bit on the Ripasso, keep an eye on 15. It has been considered an exceptional vintage, and in fact, in January, we had the Anteprima di Amarone back in Verona, where we taste around 65 wineries, and the Anteprima this year was exactly on the 2015, and I'm very impressed by the quality overall of the region. So keep an eye on 15.
So what kind of year was 2012?
2012 was considered on the good side. So we decided to use 2012 for this particular project because we were very pleased by the quality of the harvest, of the vintage.
In conversation with Andrea Sartori from Sartori di Verona. New labels?
Old labels. This,
yes, that's right. It is an old, yes.
It's new but old. We brought back to life the label that my grandfather was using back in the days. This is exactly the same label, was only slightly cleaned up by the graphic designer, but is 99.9% the same label.
What years?
Oh, this is going back to the 50s.
And did he not sign the bottle, or there was a signature?
The lettering in the Sartori name is exactly his signature.
Beautiful. That's beautiful. Any surprises? And when do you get into the bubble business?
Prosecco is a phenomenal wine that is not stopping, although it has been growing steadily in the last 10, 15 years. It's still growing, maybe single digit, but it's still growing. Now, the area, if you include the Prosecco DOC, the two DOCG, Valdobbiadene and Conegliano, is close to 550 million bottles. So even if you grow single digit, it's still a lot of bottles. And it's, again, everywhere. It is another ambassador of the Italian wines producers worldwide.
That's wonderful. It's a great flagship as well. Do you have any surprises? Because I won't see you for the next year or two. Any surprises coming our way? Anything you're working on you want to tease us with?
We are working more on producing red using the appassimento system. So we are working around into understanding which other blends we could come up with, again, using indigenous varietals. And one thing we will come out in the near future is Amarone Organic and a Ripasso Organic. So we nearly ready to go.
Any low alcohol?
No, I don't think so.
Whites? Specifically Riesling? So.
Not other varietals. We're still working on the Soave blend in this case. We think Soave is a great opportunity. Again, the Soave quality in the last 10 years has been growing dramatically, and we think Soave has a chance maybe to become the next Pinot Grigio.
For the new wine drinker, when you're standing in front of the Italian section and there are hundreds of bottles, what is it that you would recommend that they watch for on the labels, certain things?
I think consumers should be more adventurous. Italy, the beauty of Italy is the fact that we have more than 400 different appellations from the country. So the average consumer tend to be to stay on what they know.
Yeah.
But I recommend everybody be adventurous. I mean, just go searching for regions and appellations that you probably never heard of, and I'm sure that you will have a positive experience and you will discover more of the beauty that our country has to give to consumers.
If we're sitting outside, last question, but if we're sitting outside in Verona, it's your favorite restaurant, in a patio, it's sun-drenched, it's beautiful. Are these wines going to taste better there than here? Do you have to go to Italy?
Everything tastes better when you are on vacation and you're traveling. I think all of us had the same experience tasting something, whether it's a wine or a recipe or a drink, and then coming back home and trying the same experience and being disappointed. I think the fact that you are on vacations, you're sitting outside in Piazza Erbe having an aperitivo, that's what it is. I think it takes at least 50% of the experience.
Thank you for your family. Thank you for your wines, and welcome to Canada.
Thank you. Thank you. And I love Canada, so I don't need any excuse to come back.
Andre Sartori. We are tasting and talking about the history of Sartori di Verona at Hawksworth in Vancouver. I'm Terry David Mulligan, Tasting Room Radio.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Bench 1775. Friday, August the 30th. Check out Bench 1775 for their country-themed silent disco with DJ Shakes, who'll spin tunes to the wireless headphones that you have on your head. Tickets are $25 and include complimentary shuttle service. Friday, August the 30th, 7 to 10 p.m. at Bench 1775. Up ahead on Tasting Room Radio, we'll talk to Jim Cuddy about his wine, Cuddy by Taz. Chris Tolley from Moon Cursor next week, winner of the best small winery in Canada. We'll talk to Fort Barons and check in on what's going on in their part of the world. And we're going to park in the Passion Pit, the new vineyard for John Weber at Orofino. And coming for the long weekend, our special on field blends, a one-hour special on A, are we making field blends in British Columbia? And B, if we are, why aren't we putting it on the label? I've been collecting those conversations for quite some time. I'm really looking forward to bringing that to you. This is Tasting Room Radio. You can find us at mulliganstew.ca. Cheers.